just continuing a little bit the discussion about the idea that this world is a prose door. It's sort of a vestibule. As we said, there's a certain function that the problem over here, the problem that people have in religion, of course, people are attracted to the idea of the world to come. That's a very powerful attraction. It's probably the most powerful emotion that a person has is the desire for immortality. That's a very powerful thing. And it's a driving force in virtually everything that people do. The denial of death is evident in all of the... It's an amazing kind of thing. God implanted that emotion in people. Without that emotion, I don't think the world would be as developed as it is. Strange as it seems, what motivates the very ambitious people, the motivating factor behind people who are involved in conquest, quote unquote, to build things, to build buildings, to make a name for themselves, it's very much connected to the fear of death and the desire for immortality. There's no question about it. People build the buildings and their name, their reputations, and so on and so forth. They want to make a name for themselves. Is a reaction. If they didn't have that emotion, the desire for immortality, then I'm not saying there aren't any other emotions. People like to be known, people like to be wealthy, people like to be famous. But there's more to it than just the fame itself. Somehow or other, it alleviates to a certain extent. It's not a successful solution. But in their own psychic makeup, it sort of alleviates the fear of death. Well, the problem with all of this is that it's completely irrational. In the sense that what does one thing have to do with the other? They are making a mistake in that if they can make an impact and build buildings, and these buildings will endure forever. It may be true. First of all, they won't endure forever, but let's assume for thousands of years. So they're sort of projecting that onto themselves. So therefore, since that's my building and I made it and it's going to endure, so I will endure. But that's completely false. The building will endure. How long, we don't know, but it will endure, and it could endure for hundreds of years, even thousands of years, but you won't. So that's just a mistake. It's an association. This sounds absolutely foolish, but it is, in a purely rational way of thinking, but people are guided by the emotion. That's why people do tremendous amount of things to make a reputation, to write books, to be remembered. All of this, in one way or another, is an attempt to deal with that. So that element is within us. The only question is there a solution, so to speak? Is it just a desire? Is there a real solution to this problem of the fear of death or this desire for immortality? So a person has a powerful emotion, but most people simply let the emotion act itself out, and whatever conclusion the emotion arrives at, they stick with. In Judaism, there's nothing wrong with the emotion, but that should propel you towards that which is genuine. Then that should propel you to analyze, is there anything which is real? Is there anything that is eternal? Is there anything that does endure? Well, that's the... So then you have the teaching of Judaism. There's nothing wrong with the desire for immortality. God implanted that desire within you, and it's a motivating factor. It's a very powerful motivating factor. But then the mind should try to seek out that which truly is immortal. So if you have the Torah, then you're very fortunate, because that's what the Torah teaches, that there's a realm of existence which is not subject to disintegration, to destruction, that man dies only insofar as he's corporal. But there's another dimension in man, which is the divine soul. And that is not subject to the corruption, so to speak. I mean, if he's perfected his soul. And to the extent that man can connect himself to that which is eternal, which is God, to that extent he partakes of eternal existence. That's a major teaching of the that is the teaching of the Torah. That is the teaching. Indeed, that's what the Rambam says in terms of mezuzah, the significance of mezuzah. That when a person enters the house, when a person leaves the house, he encounters that which is truly eternal, that endures, that there's nothing, that the mitzvah of mezuzah is very, very significant. It's very similar to the way he describes the shofar. To jolt a person out of his involvement in the havle, the fantasies of the time. A person gets caught up with fantasy. It's an amazing kind of thing. Either he can go into the fantasy world, the same underlying desires to become famous, to deal with the problem of the limitation of his own self, the smallness. The man is battling against the smallness of the self. It's very, very difficult for a person to recognize the smallness of the self and to accept it. Now, I was mentioning that when you go to the parade, like the Israeli Day Parade, it's a very humbling experience. There's no real personal gratification, because I raised the question, does my attendance make a difference? No, it doesn't. No one's going to notice that you were there or weren't there. You're just like a part of something. So that's why it's very good, because a person has a sense that he's not really as important as he thinks he is. What's really important is the entity, Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, then you're a part of that. So that's a different way of looking at it. But people can't accept that. So they get caught. Why do people get caught up in things and all their plans and this? Everything becomes so big and they get so worked up over everything, as though God knows what. And, you know, if something works out, they're yelling and cheering. You know, this whole sense. A person has the ability to take anything and build it up in importance. Build it up, build it up, build it up. And not realizing that it's, in the scheme of things, it's a little blip. Our whole lives, I mean, you know, like we're here just a very short amount of time. And whatever it is, because take a look. Who was here 100 years ago? Who was here 200 years ago? Does anyone have any idea? No, you don't. Now, they had the same feeling that we have, that feeling that this is it. That everything, every generation has that feeling that everybody before them was somehow inferior, and the whole purpose of everything that existed before you was really for you. That the whole world really revolves around you. So basically, the question is, what's the truth? What is the truth? Is there such a thing as immortality or not? And Yahadus maintains that there is, but it's of a completely different kind. The fact that you're inclined in that direction because of an emotional desire, okay, that's a starting point. But it's not just that. If you keep the Torah, you have good reason. You have good reason to have that conviction, because that's the whole idea of the Torah, that man is different than the animals, B'Tselem Elokim, that there's another dimension, which is really at the essence of your whole being, and that's the neshama, the soul. That's not a physical thing. Now, the more you study, the more you see there is no other, doesn't stem from the physical, there's no animal that has this kind of a capability, and the more you perfect that, so that separates itself. You elevate yourself above the corporeal, and then when you die, that means the body dies, but the perfected soul lives on. So you have, first of all, you have good reason to accept it merely on the basis of the authority of the Torah. And the more you think into it, and the more you analyze, the more sense it makes to you. That the higher form of existence is not the corporeal. The higher form of existence is that type of existence that is when you're involved in the considerations, so to speak, of the other dimension, the pursuit of the fact that you can pursue something which is outside the arena of the physical, the abstract concepts, justice, compassion, the idea of truth, and to emulate the Creator. So when you consider that, the more you consider that, the more you're, that kind of an existence has reality for you. The problem is that many of the things that people talk about, it doesn't have the same kind of reality for them. The problem in reaching people is that the things that really motivate them are the things that has reality for them, are things that are concrete. They may be religious and go to shul, and they may like to hear a nice thought. Even the truth of the matter is that even the Divrei Torah that they like generally are those things that they find a place for in their mundane existence that corresponds to their emotions. You talk about being sensitive, being nice, helpful, but it's within the realm of their values. The realm of their values are very, very material. Most people anyways, is very, very connected to material. Because it, you know, whatever it is, taking care of one's children, being nice and all that, but it all revolves around some kind of a material situation. But the idea of the universe, of the realm of ideas, the world of the soul per se, that's something that doesn't make much of a dent on ordinary people. Simplistically speaking, the idea that man does partake of eternal existence is something which the mind can arrive at that idea. Great philosophers had that idea. As we said, Socrates had that idea. Basically, the person has to arrive at the conclusion that there's a different element within him, which has the capacity to relate to the world of ideas, that there's a different world, so to speak. That above and beyond the corporeal is a different world, the world of the non-physical, and that has greater reality, so to speak, that's real, and that man has within him a certain dimension which is not part of the physical makeup of the universe, but a non-corporeal element, which is a soul. And through perfecting the soul, and then the soul is designed to exist. It's just the body. These types of ideas, I'm not going through all the different steps. I'm merely saying that these types of ideas are logical propositions that make a great deal of sense. I'm just sort of simplifying it now, and great thinkers have arrived at that idea. Not all, not necessarily. I'm not saying that every rational person will agree, because there's particular issues, perhaps, that have to be worked out. But it's an idea of the Torah. So it's not that difficult, because it's not like a proposition that somebody from a different religion or a primitive is telling you that you see how, because of the same underlying psychological motivation, but people can come to different conclusions. Like the Rambam disparages these primitive religious individuals, Jews and non-Jews as well, that have this fantasy. Paradise, a certain type of a fantasy, where that's just a projection of the physical pleasures of this world in an idealized state into a different realm. That doesn't make sense, because the body's going to decompose. So what are you going to... Well, physical enjoyment, this is the arena of physical enjoyments. If a person values physical enjoyments, material, now. Materialism now. Because that's it. Then the body will decompose. However, that's something that doesn't make any sense, but a person will cling to that because it gives them a certain sense of comfort. That's a person that's really on a very primitive level. But the true idea of Olam Haba is something which really doesn't correspond to the emotions. To the contrary, it's very difficult. It's very difficult for us to even imagine it, but it is really a situation of great, great good, great, great joy, but not the kind that you're familiar with. Unfamiliar joy. But the mind, it's very appealing to the mind. The mind, you're not being asked to accept something that doesn't make sense at all. It's something which makes a great deal of sense. To appreciate Olam Haba on any level, a person has to be able to partake of the enjoyment of that which is not corporeal, not physical, the abstract, so to speak. To cultivate a love of thinking, of ideas, of truth, of the abstract. That is true. The more a person is steeped in the material, the corporeal, the sensual, so the less that this is really going to make an appeal to them. Thus, when they think about reward and punishment and everything in the afterlife, it's all in terms of the corporeal. However, that's they don't go further than that. But on some level, there's the afterlife. There's something of paradise. Many people will think of the afterlife not in terms of the base physical pleasures, but more the refined physical pleasures. Good company, you know, being reunited and so on and so forth. A different kind of a pleasure from this world. The true nature of Olam Haba, the true nature of that good, the Rambam says, that can't be described. We can't envision it. Because everything that we In vision, everything that we experience partakes of the corporal, of the physical. But nevertheless, people whose entire life revolves around developing, cultivating the love of the good, so then it's more real for them. For them, it's more real. They partake of that reality.